Hi.
Welcome to our Cyber Show New Show, our first live stream. There was so much going on this week that we just had to get in and we had to do a new show right now. Yeah. So what are we going to be talking about?
We got a bit of a list.
That we've just read through.
We haven't done that again with more passion. Ed's going to tell us what's been going on with VPN since about, what was it, 2002?
Yeah.
Potentially.
Chinese fakeaways.
Yeah.
Websites that are out there to grab all your card details and the army got hacked again.
Yeah.
And then we're going to be looking at online safety, but aren't we?
We are, yeah. And the really good BBC job that they did on Breakfast Show, and then again on the Channel 6 News later on, really highlighting a lot of parents who have a lot to say about that and their opinions, who are really picking up heart. So really good to sort of give them a voice that maybe matches what the experts have been saying for some time now on that bill.
Yeah.
So let's begin, Ed. You're going to talk about our VPN issue.
Yeah, so we've had VPNs. I'm sure a lot of people kind of know what they are, maybe used one.
Virtual private network.
There you go. So a lot of the most common cause or use, I would say, of VPNs is, you know, a lot of people that are advertised now, like NordVPN, people use them to kind of change their location if they want to watch Netflix in a country where they're not, you know, living.
That's the kind of main motivation before, is about more than 90%.
Yeah, pretty much more than 90%.
Want to geolocate their IP somewhere else.
Yeah.
But then there's a lot more that's used the VPNs for work at home, corporate.
Or banking in your own personal home. You might switch that on to do your banking safely and things like that. So but work from home, it seems to be the biggest target here for the VPN potentially.
Yeah, so the issue that we're talking about is something called tunnel vision. It's been recently discovered, and it's a vulnerability in a VPN protocol. That's actually to do with DHCP or something called Dynamic Host Configuration.
It's not in the VPN protocol, is it?
It's not actually
mechanics around it.
Yeah, so it affects the VPN protocol, but in the way that it actually goes and asks the network for a new IP address as a VPN client.
How it communicates with that router, that little box in your house, that's really what's doing it, right?
Yeah.
So it's that communication happening. They've managed to use DHCP to really get in.
Yeah,
and leak all your stuff.
Yes, exactly. So it's kind of at the stage where it goes and asks for an address, and it's at that point where the malicious attackers can actually get in and then redirect that traffic to their network and then can actually see the contents of all of your exchanges and packets between the network you think you're talking to, but it's actually the man in the middle.
Right. And it's really been the biggest effect of this. So people think, oh my God, have I been safe at home? You probably have been. Your home network has probably been looked after But it's for all those coffee shop workers. And we all know the guy like having the really loud meeting, like, shouting in the coffee shop on the Wi-Fi. They potentially have been putting their company and their own data at risk for some time now, right?
Because your LAN there, your local area network, is that weird guy in the hoodie in the corner. He's on that LAN in the coffee shop. And
set
also,
like that.
We thought about places like trains, you know, any public Wi-Fi like that. People are accustomed now to using VPNs.
Right.
But, you know, you're not safe there.
Well, it gives this a lured sense. There's so many times that I've had situations where you go, look, there's been a security incident here.
Yeah.
And they go, oh, no, there's a VPN.
Yeah.
You're like, yeah, that's great. Do you think it was completely, if like the network's completely taken or an end device is completely taken, and the VPN is not considered? Like, that's not going to keep you safe.
No.
Right? And I don't think people understand like what it's quite doing. It's encrypting your network traffic. It is not preventing all hackers. So we've built this complacency where we think, well, I've got a VPN, I'm safe from everything. Mm-hmm. Like, nothing can touch us.
Yeah, I think that's quite the ironic thing about this vulnerability is the fact that you think you're using a virtual private network, but it's the complete opposite, because just the fact of actually using a VPN in that sense, and it's using DHCP to get that IP address, means that that malicious attacker is then getting in there and actually taking all your data packets. So it's the complete opposite of private, which is a bit ironic, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, once someone can take control of your route, I mean, that's a big problem, and it's probably invisible to most people, right? They don't notice that's going on.
Yeah.
So we've got a few sort of technical suggestions. I mean, so these are probably beyond your average kind of person, but there's some simple steps that we could kind of talk about.
Yeah.
One of them was like using fixed IP addresses.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, most people think that's just crazy. Why would I do that? You know, DHCP is there for convenience.
Yeah.
You know, really DHCP, Dynamic Host Configuration Protocol, was kind of thought up for large organizations where you've got hundreds of devices coming in and out of scope. on a domestic network, you know, if you've got like 10 devices in your house, why not just give them a fixed IP?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I know mine off by heart.
Mm.
Yeah. So, but knowing how to do that on your router is something that you need to sort of dig into a little bit. Then if you've got a fixed IP between your laptop and the router, there's no way that something is going to take control of that route because you've hardwired it in, yeah.
Yeah.
And how do we address this problem in businesses? So if you have been working in a coffee shop and you have been dealing, and you're expected to do that tomorrow morning, Monday, it's a Friday, but you're expected to do that Monday morning, and they're like, right, take this document home, we want you to work on that from like your usual coffee place in the coffee shop. How do they keep that safe? Well, if they need to use DHCP, if that's the way that it's configured, then the only real defense to that is just to take that document and actually physically work on that offline. So you can still work in a coffee shop if you think that your VPN is a problem. Yeah, okay. Well, you might have to just not be on the internet in that brief moment that you're doing that document.
I think that
it's very secure. It depends on the document level. I mean, if it's just marketing data and it's something you're going to put out there anyway.
Could be sensitive.
But if it's sensitive and it's something that's very private financial information, scheduled data, you really need to work out right now where you're going to be doing that.
Yeah.
Is that VPN actually keeping you safe?
I think the idea of offline working is completely alien to remote workers. So should we just kind of explain what we mean by that?
Yeah, we talked about it quite a bit earlier, didn't we?
We were talking because we're older, right? So we remember a time when broadband was rubbish, absolute rubbish. And you were asked to work at the weekend.
Yeah.
I remember days when you had my dad would bring a floppy disk home to work on work.
Yeah, at home. Yeah.
So we were using those mediums and we've been doing that for a long time. And I remember doing my degree by like emailing files. Like we were still in printout mode. So you'd have to like write on it at home.
Yeah.
Email it in because the USBs were not accepted.
And people
out.
Think, well, that's crazy, crazy old people, inefficient stuff. Because we're all online now.
It's
instant and convenient. But, you know, that is the intention with security.
Mm.
And so, you know, air-gapped machines, as we call them, or just offline working. Now, if you're a manager, think, well, how could I actually, you know, think with a cybersecurity perspective, I'm going to give this data and to somebody to go and work at home with, make that work package be an offline work package.
So
you don't connect to the internet on this device. And so how are you going to get it on there? Well, maybe you bring your laptop into work and load it up. But it's a really practical, you know, and once you can get over yourself with this silly obsession with efficiency and realise, you know, you don't need to be connected all the time. It's perfectly okay to have a machine that's offline.
Is that the employees or is that the managers wanting to be
connected
all the time?
Everybody wants,
You can't spy on someone if they're not on the internet. Yeah, it took me all day to do that one document. But you need
because they like to look at their Microsoft Teams status to see if they've moved their mouse in the last
time. Well, their own ability to let go of control
right.
is a security weakness.
Yeah.
You know, that's a trust issue.
Yeah.
And we talk about that a lot.
And lazy management, right? Because if I'm going to send someone home to go work from a cabin and I need them to do 8 hours work, well, I'm going to give them 8 hours work based on their pace. I'm not going to be like, oh, just accept whatever report I'm given. You don't need to spy on people. You just need to have an acceptable level of work.
Bossware is bad.
Right?
People need to get their head around it. Bossware is bad stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's workplace bullying remotely, isn't it?
But there are some needs for some logs, some just for security, but constantly logging in to see how long someone's toilet break was while they worked from home and doing a comparison to when they're in the office might not be the ideal thing.
Stop doing that.
It's
affecting your security. It's hurting your security. You need to be able to work offline sometimes.
Yep.
Yeah.
Exactly. What's next on the agenda? So it was... Warhol. It was
the watering hole.
Fakeaways, that's what you call it.
Chinese fakeaways.
Yeah.
Because I thought you meant, when you said watering hole attack, I mean, that's a general description
it's
for
a
class of attack.
It
is. But it turns out that this one's about shopping, and it affects a lot of people because it's they're fake sites set up to deliver drive-by malware for what, fake designer products, Gucci's and...
Well, so far what they've discovered is that it's essentially a scam at this point. It's been used to harvest details. So it isn't delivering malware, but I mean, it can do at any point. And some of those websites we just may not have detected may have been doing that. So it's only a very new thing
that we've
seen.
Right, they're harvesting, aren't they?
They are
so they're just taking...
Data.
It's a complete data harvesting operation.
Right. Yeah.
From start to end. That's the entire point of it. And that is where the money is made in terms of the little amount that is actually paid to them for buying the product.
So discounted goods from Dior, Nike, Lacoste,
Versace,
and Prada, etc. This was as we called in the Guardian, was it?
It was the Guardian. Yeah. It was the Guardian and a number of other groups. We got Desite as well, and we had the French newspaper.
Le Monde.
Yeah, they've done a really, really good job on finding this information by themselves. So they've been going and looking at these websites since around 2015, I think, a long time. Mm-hmm. And they are essentially taking your details with an offer that looks really, really good. You're going onto their website, they can do pretty much anything while you're on there. But what they have been doing is harvesting people's payment details in particular, they think is the main reason for it. And we're seeing 800,000 people have bought the products, because what happens is 50% of them haven't turned up. And we've all heard that in the news, we may have experienced it ourselves, ordered something from a website, it's not arrived. But the whole point of the website was to attend, potentially not only get your name and address, but your CVE number and those very critical data that you have. There isn't any mention of theft currently using that, but imagine that you've got one nation state that now has all of the potential payment details of 800 million.
Do we know that's a nation state? Was that?
That was the name of the report itself has said that it is Chinese hackers is the name.
but they're a bunch of, to me, it looks like cyber criminal. I mean, looks like a good racket, right? You sell gear at cost, you harvest the data and you flog it.
Yeah.
Right? Why does everyone... Yeah. I don't think that implies...
Sell the data to the highest bidder at the end.
But no one's buying that data. No, they're not selling that yet. So
they're selling it to the government. Eventually,
they're collecting a nice big bowl of data.
Exactly. And it's one nation in particular that's doing that. So it leaves you thinking, like, well, Why is it only coming from one country? If this was really, really good for cyber criminals to make a load of money out of, we would see this everywhere. We would see it all over the West as well, because some of the most prolific hackers are in the US, right? And we haven't seen that as much, not as much. Maybe we just haven't looked into that. Mm. And these websites are very clever. So when we talk about fake websites, particularly in our workplace and our training, they'll show you copies of websites and URLs that look alike. This isn't what they were doing. They were creating a fantastic, really well thought out marketing shop. And the only real thing, and this is the thing, like we have the NCSC going out and telling us, if the deal looks too good to be true, it is. Yeah. How have we lost that sense? Because we know
this
that
is common
in
sense,
shops,
really.
Right?
It's like,
I think people don't know the manufacturing cost of goods.
Yeah.
Now, we were talking about silicon earlier when we were saying that things that was an Apple Watch or something sold for how much they go for here?
So
a grand?
I think the guy was working out that they're expensive because they're branded.
20 quid.
But there was a man who managed to work out how much a watch, if you made the same exact technology without any branded goods.
Take the bill of materials. What's the cost of making the
£25
thing?
£25 and TV
was selling. So it's probably less than that. It's a tenner or something.
It's the software.
It was more than that. It's
the software they kind of throw the price.
Factor that out, because we're talking about a piece of hardware.
Just the hardware.
In particular, this
is
about
you're selling it for 20 quid.
Well, this is about the team new iPhone watch that was being sold for a tenner, and a lot of people had worked out that it's way more than that. That if you take just the cost of the goods that are going into it, the chips, everything else.
So it's not even a real deal. It's not even that cost.
So you're getting that cheap. So they are spending more money on that particular item
to get the data. That's how much your data is worth. That's how much your data is worth.
And to steal the market as well. And that's what we've seen. And we mentioned that before. Mm. But what's happening on the internet at the moment is these companies will come in and they'll go, oh, I'm the cheapest. I'm the bargain place to go. We trust that. 10 years later, they are not the cheapest anymore. And it's something that I mentioned on our Go, which will come out later. But we're seeing this a lot. And if you go to places like Amazon and eBay now, and you look and you compare that to a same product in an actual shop that's being sold online, you'll probably find your shop is doing it cheaper. And we've not seen that since e-commerce.
Which is ironic, really, considering they've got to pay for bricks and mortar, you know, business insurance, wages, all that stuff in the mix as well. And
let's go back to the sites for a minute, because I just want to make a comment. Okay. But one of the problem is the web. The way the web is at the moment, it's an absolute train wreck.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's a scandal that in 2024 anyone can just set up a website that infects millions of computers. Very poor. The web's a very poor ecosystem, and it's really declined so much over the last kind of decade. It's become so bloated. There's so much code running on your browser that just doesn't need to be.
Yeah.
Right.
And there's so much JavaScript and style sheet scripts, and people have no idea what the browsers are doing anymore. Really.
Yeah.
I mean, they're just out of control, effectively. Mm. The web is increasingly looking like a really bad place for commerce.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
especially where you can't, well, how many of these sites still exist? Almost none of them now. So you're ordering something from a website that's not been up very long, and it's not going to stay up very long. Where is the trust from the consumer gone, right?
I think also there's a little bit of miscommunication. A lot of people 5-10 years ago were told, look for the green padlock.
Right.
And then you know it's safe.
Mm-hmm.
But any one of these websites can get a Let's Encrypt certificate in 5 seconds.
No. Mm-hmm.
Doesn't necessarily mean that it's safe. It just means that the data's safe in transit to them.
People don't understand the trust model.
But they don't understand the whole trust model.
And didn't Google actually take that off at one point?
Yeah.
They thought it confuses people.
Yeah.
So they removed the green tick, which I don't know if that was a good thing or a bad thing.
Yeah.
It doesn't help, does it?
No, no, exactly. Yeah.
But they're still falling for it, right? People are still going on websites and thinking, oh, I can get my designer gear.
Mm.
A lot cheaper through this strange website that I've never encountered, never heard of. And do you know what? At 12 o'clock, which is when we're buying those products, we're not thinking right. We're not thinking as securely minded as we are. And we're just thinking, great, that's a deal.
Mm.
They're applying to our greed and you know, really going for it with those designer things that they know are going to sell. Someone else is doing the marketing for them and that
well,
as
that,
well.
On that marketing point as well, there's if you look at social media apps, you can see the advertisement for these websites. And there's also this kind of mistrust of like they're advertising on Facebook, so it must be real.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like, oh, I've just seen it and
trust by association.
There. Yeah. Yeah. It's not like you just searched the web and found a dodgy site. It's like you've literally pressed a link through Facebook.
And Facebook have this like weird thing now, right, where you go,
yeah,
it's definitely my ad because I'm the registered company that did it. So that thought, Facebook can say, oh, actually, this ad's safe.
Yeah.
If you set up a fake company with a fake website with a fake shop, that will not actually be flagged, will it? Because you are.
But it's all real.
It's all real. It's just your motive's the suspect.
Yeah.
So as far as Facebook is concerned, you never have to deliver a product to anyone, but so long as your DNS matches up, that's good, that's safe, that's a shop.
Yeah.
That's a problem.
Yeah. I got two more points to end this one on. Number one, what is the W3C consortium doing? Whatever happened to web governance?
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And also, what comes after the www? You know, and it's not www version 2.0. It's got, I think, something big's got to change, hasn't it?
I think on the W3C point, there's just it's not the same as it was back in the early 2000s in terms of the governance around, you know, standardization of certain web protocols and the way HTML is formatted and things like that. It's kind of a free-for-all now because web browsers have become very compliant with crap code and all embedded kind of JavaScript that's come from here, there and everywhere.
Compromised bodge together, really.
And there is no real regulation. It's just kind of a standardised HTML, JavaScript, CSS protocol. They've all kind of mashed together and
bunch of libraries.
If it looks good, then it's fine. Tick.
And then we've still got supply chain risk there as well. There's like one guy in a bedroom somewhere who has a really busy life. He's getting a bit on now. He's designed one of the core libraries that we're all dependent on our browsers. He doesn't have that support up until now, and there is movement on that. We have seen things like Omega form, which will actually go and go, actually, you do need help, you do need security, you do need Pat Lyon on your system, so we're all going to get together and we're going to support you and help you. And we need way more of that. That's
such
why
a
web
massive
is
topic,
going
isn't it? Did we do a blog article on that?
Poison code.
About the vulnerability of people that are developing this software are really prone to getting hacked themselves, right?
Oh, they're busy. Yeah. They're just too busy. They have a life, and they may have set this up in 1993 and now all web's built on it. And you might have been in your 20s in 1993 and think, I can manage this whole server on my little program that I've made. But it's 2024
now. My bash script will rule them all.
And now everyone's using it and like Amazon call you up and go, what have you done? And you're like, I'm at work right now.
I think there's like a, it's a kind of supply chain risk thing again, but with these embedded jQuery scripts that are based on this dependency, based on that dependency, and you go up the tree, and it's kind of like I don't know if you've seen that meme where you've got like a tiny little stone, and
it's kind of holding up the entire internet,
and it's like this project made in 1994 that's being maintained by Phil in Dorset, and it's kind of going.
And that's the
problem. Just the reality of how the entire web structure is still, there is no standardization or protection of all of these dependencies that people are just embedding in their websites?
Because it's all free open source software.
Yeah.
It's been developed by people out of the goodness of their hearts and their own interest and enthusiasm.
Yeah.
And it's now supporting the entire web ecosystem.
Yeah. But we do know about that. And there is a lot of movement, particularly from people like us, pressurizing essentially the big tech giants going, you know, hello, I'm a security engineer. You know how you're really reliant on this really dodgy thing?
Why don't you pay that guy?
Your whole entire business is relying on this one guy, bless him.
You
need to actually give him some support now and work with him.
I think that's just...
still needs to remain open source, because they're not going to work with you if you suddenly start putting it into your branded version.
Depends on the licensing,
like I mentioned, Omega, and that's...
And it should be using GPL. You should be protecting the open source environment and not taking it off on some liberal license and then breaking it.
I think that's just...
getting in the cupboard.
That's just one of the risks of using open source software. That I think is not the fault of the developer themselves, but the lack of support in the supply chain as, you know, something that was made for a group of people to enjoy as a free project has now turned into something the entire financial regulations and systems rely on of a whole country.
Exactly.
And yet the people that have got all that money and power have not actually
invested
that money back in the supply chain.
This is one of the consequences of an equity. Yeah. It's not financial inequity, it's power inequity.
Yeah.
And so you've got this enormous thing resting on one person that's being exploited terribly.
This is the biggest problem that we see with the internet, actually, is that I guess those developers weren't brought on and weren't paid for their work because they see even though it's propping up all their systems, they saw it as not marketable.
Yeah.
That's not profitable. We depend on it entirely and we totally need it, but we're not. Yeah. It's not going to make any money, so we're not going to invest in it. But actually, I think we're waking up today and we're realising that investment was needed.
Yeah.
And that we do need to. That if you are a big tech giant, even if you're a fairly sizable business and you're using something that becomes a core part of what you're delivering, you need to make sure that that supplier has the support that they need
It's parasitical, isn't it?
It is.
You know, it's,
And what was that EU legislation we were looking at that's actually going to affect the actual open source market and the financial reliability on that? That's a bit...
Yeah,
Cyber Resilience Act by EU is coming in. And actually, that's working, and that's why we're getting things. So Amazon and Microsoft have teamed up, actually, to try and support a lot of developers that they rely on, particularly for their cloud services. And they're doing that at cost. And they wouldn't have done that without, I think, the European Union turning around and going, this needs addressing and we need support. And so we see a lot of companies. We were at BT recently who were sort of mumbling about how do we deal with the open source market? How do we make it secure? And I think that they're going to be prepared to do some more on that. And we're going to see a lot of that in the UK as well. Potentially, collaboration is the word that we are hearing. Whenever we go to events and we talk about open source, it's that communication and that collaboration that we're not getting and that support for all of those open source things that we need. And hopefully, developers that are really working hard and not earning a lot of profit will get that support that they need, because they are popping up.
And it's all kinds of support as well. It's also emotional, social support. So a lot of... vulnerable developers are coming under social engineering attacks, you know, and people are trying to take control of their projects. How do you protect developers like that? I mean, that seems like a kind of security services type problem.
I mean, I think when we first looked at it and it was in the early stages, we were quite worried, because it looked like suddenly all of that risk and stuff goes straight to the open source developers that are doing it for non-profit.
Right.
But as it got worked out down the line, I think we kind of, those people have been separated, and actually it's more to do with that supply chain we're talking about, and where there's actually money cycling through these apps.
Well, where does that start? With Debian?
I mean, it's still a little bit
collaboration
of a mess, and it's being worked out, but it's something we should keep an eye on, I think.
If you're Firefox right now and you're using 140 dependencies, which was one of the lowest, like, you need to know, one, what those are, and two, where they're coming from, and give them a damn ring tomorrow and go, hey, like, can we all have a little meeting online with you?
Come and have tea and biscuits with us.
Yeah.
We'd like to meet you. We've built our business on you.
We're depending on you. We'd like to know who you are. If you need any help, what's your cat's name? When's your birthday? I'll send you a gift.
What's your mother's maiden name?
I feel like you've been our employee for 30 years, so I know nothing about you. We should meet them. Yeah, it's a good idea. Well, we should move on. We're running out of time.
Yes, we do. We've got a lot of topics, haven't we? So, MOD hack.
Yeah, briefly, yeah. People are panicking, like mega panicked about that. Like the army got hacked. Oh my god!
Mm. Payroll. Their payroll.
There's a payroll system. Yeah. Right.
It's, yeah, it's, I think not, it was a. I don't know what the exact percent. It was a low percentage of the total amount of people on payroll that had things like their home address leaked. It wasn't all of them, as far as they've said, according to the report. But it was some, which is not good.
And the MOD is not just
shouldn't
the army.
Be any.
Right, the MOD is not just the army, it's anyone. Anyone who does anything for the government. Yeah. If you deliver tea and biscuits to any sort of government-based military site, you are probably working for the... someone would say, well, we work for the MOD.
You'll be on the database.
So it could be, potentially, we're not going to know which details were stolen, but they didn't seem to be concerned about it. We have said that it's not really a security issue.
No,
I'm hoping it's our cleaner list, you know? Like, really, right now. And I think we're all in that situation, but I guess it...
It's always a good story. Story, isn't it? The army guy, it's supposed to be tough, you know. It's like, well, can't they just send a tank round to the Kangas house? Like, no, it doesn't work like that.
Yeah, where are they? It's the first clue.
This one I know that this, sorry, I'm just going to make an acerbic comment
because
I've got one down here. A pattern of contemptible redress and contemptuous tokenism. Which was, I always keep seeing this and it does my head in every time. This is a Guardian report. Affected service personnel will be alerted as a precaution and provided with specialist advice. They will be able to use a personal data protection service to check whether their information is being used.
Never mind. It's not as fun anymore.
Doesn't matter. We'll put it back on in a minute.
Yeah.
So that's what they get.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, sorry you got food poisoning. Like, have a prawn sandwich.
Yeah. Sorry, just to wash it down. Off. Yeah.
Yeah, have a pair of free shoes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Be warned if you get it. Well, they were concerned about one particular thing, and that is blackmail. Not just blackmail. They could potentially find some information, but it's turning people. It's, you know, basically, if you work for the MOD and you get that letter saying, I'm so sorry, and someone, a mystery man in the pub, starts offering you money for doing very little... for you, definitely go and speak to your employer. But they have the
Black
Secrecy
hoodie
Act.
On in the corner.
Oh, yeah, they're trained, right? Yeah. So a strange Russian man comes for a chat and says, oh, we know where you work. Like, you do you know,
it is it is sensitive. I know there's potential harms there.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, okay. But yeah, generally, the military's not as well protected as you might think.
And apparently, nor is the airport. And I guess this rolls into it. Everyone's panicking. The first thing they thought this week was that the airport had been hacked.
Yeah.
It's definitely not been hacked. And we need
Was it Manchester and London?
The border gates went red.
Yeah.
But this is not the first time, guys. And I think this is what we do. And it's really hard that it's not the public's fault. It's not really our fault. We're trying to get that information out there. It's difficult. But like, how, as engineers, do we hear something like that and instantly know that's not a hack, that is a hack? And that's difficult. It does take time, but actually we saw that coming. We've seen a lot of IT issues in the last few months overall across the airport. We saw it. One software bug caused immense landing issues because no one had thought years ago that they might accidentally enter two of the same IDs in. It crashed the whole system. Planes couldn't land, and this is the system that we've got in the airport. It's obviously not doing very well. The network's a bit problematic. A server may be
probably based on open source somewhere. Someone hasn't been given the support they need to maintain it.
I think the problem is redundancy. I guess we all expect that, you know, our airports and everything like that, you know, border
triple modular redundancy.
Right.
No, they just run on some outsourced cloud service. And this is my gripe, is that most of this stuff, you say, oh, the army or the navy or the civil service or the post office, you know.
Yeah.
It's not them. You know, it's the contractors that wrote the software behind and the providing cloud services. We outsource everything.
And we know that. And don't start thinking, is it Fujitsu again? Well, there's multiple companies. It's not just one. And all code is buggy. And we keep saying this over and over again.
Yeah.
You have to expect that. And no network is going to run without downtime. Downtime network is a thing. Mm. And yes, that may be inconvenience when it happens at the airport. Mm. But it might be too much investment for the airport to suddenly go and get this huge IT system. Just thank God our planes don't lose connection and drop out of the sky. You know, that's, I would say, more important than the gates.
Okay, let's leave that one for now because there's angry things written down here.
Yeah,
we're happy about that. Online safety bill. Was it good enough? Is it going to be good enough?
So the BBC breakfast began on Wednesday morning by having a really lovely, heartwarming meeting with a lot of the parents who've been very public about their children who've died as a result of the internet. And I 100% agree. Mm. Some people say, oh, well, is it the actual internet? It is. It's social media. It's social media. Social media on the internet has had that impact on them. And those parents know that, and those cases have been investigated. Mm. We know that they've been in certain areas, such as, in areas where they're getting bullied, where they're getting attacked, or they're glorifying dangerous mm-hmm. situations, dangerous tricks, TikTok things.
Yeah.
But that parent can categorically say, this is the cause, this social media thing right here, this device, this software. Yeah.
Caused the death of my child,
and they were under an age where they should have been able to consent. Yeah. And as a parent, they feel that they have to give in.
I think it's a social reality, and so we've got a few talking points on it that we've been thinking about, haven't we? Mm.
I guess I want to start with probably the most important thing that I took away from that is when Brianna Gray's mum looked directly into the camera and said, "Can someone not just make a smartphone that is safe? That is safe for our children." That sparks so many debate points because why is that not possible?
Well, I mean, there are deeper questions. There are why are mums giving smartphones to kids?
Mm-hmm.
And there's peer pressure, social pressure.
Yeah.
And the dumb phones are a much better idea. It's going rapidly up, isn't it? It's at 11% or something.
So 11% of children.
If you've got children, give them dumb phones.
Yeah,
or they don't have a phone.
They don't have a phone. Okay. A smartphone. Yeah. Right. So some of those, like myself, will be thinking, well, I still need my son to be able to contact me.
That's the main one, isn't it?
It's proximity
control.
Mm. Yeah, and you know what? You don't need a smartphone. A dumb phone's great now. You've got a browser on it. You've got maps on it. You've got cameras on it. Oh, no, your child doesn't have WhatsApp. Oh, they can't be bullied on the way home from school. Yeah. But it's okay, because they can get home and load up their computer.
But turn that around, because what we've noticed here is that some kids were getting bullied, but not by other peers who saying, you've got a shitty baby phone,
that's
haven't
happening.
You?
Well,
that's
I think there's on the point of bullying, there's a kind of, with smartphones, it comes with that hyperconnectivity point. And bullying at school used to end when they got home. It used to be a safe place for kids to go and say, yeah, I didn't have a very good day, but at least I'm not in that situation now. But that doesn't exist anymore. You can be bullied 24/7.
Yeah.
If your phone is on.
If you've got a smartphone and you're leaving it on and you're exposing yourself to it.
And that show highlighted it quite well. We had Ofcom that explained, they're like, why are you not increasing the regulation? And she said straight away, we cannot increase the regulation because what happens is the companies that we're trying to regulate will just bombard us with litigation and loads of problems. They've got a lot of wealth, they've got a lot of power, and we talk about that a lot.
Yeah.
And that's why we don't have a secure smartphone, because that's the thing that we have to get around. There is absolutely the technology and the drive and the will to go and do that, right?
There is absolutely all possible. Mm. Yeah, we say here, big tech is the cybersecurity problem. big tech lobbying, completely at odds with child safety. It's
absolutely
really ugly.
Mm. It's
what's going on? It's their profit. So it's all doable. So we kind of been brainstorming ideas and thinking there's plenty of sources of funding for people, for open source, want to fork like a Librem operating system or operating, because actually we kind of worked out that the most important point isn't the carrier. You can't really look to the telephone companies, can you?
No.
We couldn't look to the social media companies because it's a principal agent problem. Yeah. They're never going to sort it out. So that's our starting point. The social media companies are never going to sort it out. No. Right? You have to make just to go directly. It's going to be in the operating system, isn't it?
It's not just that as well. It's the company that actually takes us on. If a small startup company thinks, oh, great, I'm going to create a new phone, they're going to come up with a lot of competition, a lot of problems.
Yeah.
And then they're going to have problems where they say, well, actually, I don't want your social media app online until you do this. Or if you're a little fish and you've got no power and you've got no money, you're going to find it very, very difficult to keep that out. And so I really think that if we want to create a smartphone, it has to be done on a government level.
Well,
we need some state regulation, we need funding.
And it's because it cannot be Apple or Google.
No.
It can't be Android because the principal agent problem is compromised out of the box.
Yeah.
They're not aligned with what's being done.
Yeah.
And I think a way to say people go, well, you can't work diametrically against these guys. So at the end of the day, they've got a choice. I think we're getting to a point where either they do not have phones under the age of 18 and you potentially do lose your adult customers because they've never had a phone, right?
Yeah.
So they're going to stop. That 11% may never, ever go on a phone. They use a computer instead. They're now a PC client.
Yeah.
What might happen is, as more parents wake up to this, as we raise more awareness, as more children die, unfortunately, more parents will be more inclined to say no phone. So it's either you give them an alternative that they might go onto your phone when they're 18, they will go out and buy Android, they may go out and buy iPhone, and have incentives to do that at 18, or potentially lose more and more market every single year as we age up, because parents are not going to, that number's going to increase.
Let's move out of markets and the technicalities and back to psychology a little bit, because what broke my heart seeing some of that and reading some of the comments was mums, I presume, maybe dad, saying I gave my 10-year-old, 9-year-old a smartphone and they're on TikTok and they've got all these problems, but when I tell them to get rid of that app, they say no. It's like, hold on, let's just wind that back. You gave your kid a smartphone, right? And now you're having problems with that ecosystem. It comes down to, and we don't want to paint parents as being bad parents, right? Because parenting is difficult, right? Learning how to say no, really, there's a big problem with that we can't say no.
Yeah.
And we got to learn to say no.
I tell you an interesting thing. My son's little friend, they're coming up to that age where they're going out into teenage year, pre-teen, very at the end of the pre-teen, they're mostly teenagers now. And one of them got a brand new £1,000 iPhone and he dropped it in a puddle on the same day and absolutely ruined it, and it wasn't insured. So that lasted all about 24 hours. So, you know, you may think as a parent, well, I'm going to buy my kid this really this expensive device that every kid wants, and my kid's going to be really popular as it. Well, it's not a very good day for you when they come home and go, oh, I did drop it in a puddle and that was ruined.
I think there's like this... it's just this controversy that's built up surrounding phones, and it's kind of it's in the balance until actually something really tragic happens to someone, and it's at that point where they go, oh, actually, yeah, that's not good, and there's a complete lack of that until it actually that doesn't really spread. It just kind of happens in little pocketed environments where, unfortunately, you know, a young person might lose their life to suicide from bullying because of being hyper connected to smartphones.
Yeah,
but that doesn't generally spread very far, and it just kind of keeps happening. Something needs to change
it's about risk modelling and education.
It was about regulation as well, and that's why we had the online safety bill, but it's not good enough, because it's not going to be good enough, because they're not going to be able to, the parents, anyone who's actually going to say to the children, you are not allowed to use TikTok, you are not allowed to use Facebook.
But the parents need to understand the risks and the harms. This is a really central thing, because there are very distinct risks and harms, like, for instance, cyberbullying versus being stalked by a pedo versus having your privacy violated by the company that you're using, because children have privacy rights too. And when we interviewed them, they said we deserve even more privacy rights than adults.
They
said that, didn't they?
They did.
So there's many different areas, maybe their intention as well. But we need to get that worked out, and we need to get parents to understand how to communicate with their kids and say, this is a risk, you can't have this, but then maybe in a year you can have that, and this is why. You know?
This is like going back to my childhood with things like South Park and PS1. Like, you know, we were playing GTA 5. I remember literally being 9 and just running over grannies or something in GTA 5.
Carmageddon, do you remember that?
Yeah, like taxi driver, just like run over the people. Woo! And actually, if you play GTA now, it's a very different game, and I would never let my children do that. The themes, the story has changed, there's way more involved, there's a lot more darker things in there. Before then, the story was just like, skip that, just go drive around like a nutter. But my parents didn't know the dangers of that. I remember my mum walking in, and it was like the most rudest South Park season 2 episode, and I was 9, and she was like, oh, you're just watching cartoons. And we were like,
yeah
of course it's a cartoon. And
I showed
her that as an adult recently, and she was like, oh my god, I can't believe I didn't notice this. This is so horrendous, like, it's ruined you. It's like, no, it made me good. But that's the problem, is that we may not be aware of it. As parents, we can be a little bit behind something that we may think is benign, or something for children, like Roblox is a good example of that. My son is asking me every day for that. There's loads of adult themes in that that's not acceptable.
Well, it's a sandbox game, part of it, because anyone can make maps and put like text in it and whatever.
Any game,
it's just completely like open to...
I've heard reports of strange women in there sort of coming on with lots of clothes missing, talking to children, is a report I had of a lady who was doing my hair, and that was happening in her house, and he's 9, and she thought he was playing games. So it's not just social media, it's coming into children's lives, even in their gaming environment. And as parents, we need to really get together, and we need to do something about it.
It's perceived safe, but it's not. That's a big problem.
Is part of parenting unlocking and showing your children around the digital world now.
Yeah, eventually, yeah. And especially at this cusp as well, where they're going into big school and they suddenly have to do computing properly. So they didn't have to do it before, they do it at school with a laptop and a teacher. But
it's the digital equivalent of kind of like taking your child to the grown-up park, or, you know, where there's the bigger kids.
Yeah.
And then you're kind of staging it in that way. It's like, watch
go on the big slide now.
You can go on the big slide, yeah.
It's not even like that, because they're older, right? It's, it's like the alcohol at Christmas dilemma. And the alcohol when you're in France at 14, and they're like, I'm allowed to drink here. And you're like, you are allowed to have one drink. And then the wine glass comes that's a large, and your child's like going to generally be pissed, and you're thinking, like, am I allowed to do this?
Why?
Like, if your kid is 14, 16, you have only got 2 to 4 years before they can buy as much wine as they like.
Well, get involved, because if you're involved, if you're a parent, get involved. Mm. Because if you're not involved, you don't know what's going on.
And that's what we all do, like the teenage Christmas. We've all been there as teenagers. I remember my parents going, you can have wine today. It'd be like the lowest grade. But had I not done that at that age, I wouldn't have felt a bit tipsy. I'd have no idea what was coming, and I probably would have pushed it. And so that's a part of it, isn't it? When your kids get older, you do need to teach them those things that they know they're going to do.
Yeah.
So if you know your child is coming into an age where they're going to be using social media, that's absolutely paramount that you prepare them for that, like you would about not smoking.
Yeah.
Or riding in cars with strangers who don't have very good driving licenses.
It says free sweets on the side of a van.
I think people know that. And they're just getting comfortable with that as a reality.
Yeah,
it's got to become more and more part of parenting. Mm. Right, are we ready to move on to the trash?
Cyber trash. So I should explain what this is, right? So
go on.
It's like our punishment naughty list. So if your cyber security should have been really good, because we all rely on it to be good, and it was a little bit trashy, it's going to feature.
Maybe it's not shame and blame, though.
Should be.
Yeah.
One of our original names for the cyber show was going to be Cyber Trash, wasn't
it? Yeah, it was.
We were like, put Euro Trash, but we're just like really kind of seedy, funny stories from the cyber world, and then it got a bit more serious.
There's loads of people at age now Googling Euro Trash. I'm really sorry. so sorry.
What year did it end? It was 2000 and something, wasn't it?
2004, man. You were like 4 years
old. I love Euro Trash. Yeah. It was awesome. And it's Eurovision Song Contest tonight.
It is.
Tomorrow.
Totally off piece now. Right, so who's on our naughty list this week?
Yeah.
We've got Adele.
Big naughty list here. Oh, there's some naughty step is full of people. Who have been very, very bad.
We need like the graphics on the screen.
We will get those.
We need to run the cyber space.
So do that for the next one.
So who have we got here?
Dell have managed to leak 49 million records of its clients.
49 million.
A few then.
Yeah, just a few, like, the entire database. So that's what they're theorising. And Dell are really big. So if you've worked in IT and that sort of thing, you know there's quite a nice discount potentially for a lot of people.
Customers, model numbers.
Yeah, good. You can get a nice discount. But
service numbers and their links to email addresses and company info.
Right, okay. So there's a lot of IT managers right now who have accidentally given out their name, company information, email address.
Phone number.
How many computers they are buying, when they are buying, and the operating system. And the reason they struck now.
So what's the attack surface then on that?
Because I tell you why, because every single person in this year pretty much who runs in a Microsoft environment has got to go and replace Windows 10. They need a whole new hardware system. And so we're going to see absolutely piles of skips this year, just full of computer parts from the Windows 10. There's a huge jump in the demand of spec. So you suddenly need a big drive, you need all these things.
Yeah.
As a result, your existing technology that's running Windows 10 may even be only a year old. It's going in the bin.
So get rid of it and put Linux on it instead. Because wasting your money on that.
Bring up the Mad Andy icon in the corner.
Won't flash up every time we mention them. And then we've got like the security company.
We got that as well, haven't we? So, security for the security guards caused insecurity.
Yes. So
who were they, Ed?
A security industry company.
We won't name them.
We won't directly name them yet. They essentially had shed loads of data leaked, including CCTV data and images,
data records, and criminal offences.
For the guards, checking in, it was their faces, probably a face checking.
Basically, an entire kind of image or picture of a load of individuals.
ID cards. Not just that, there were comments. There were like comments on people where they're like, watch out for this dodgy geezer, he's a
right-wronging.
With their face and their date of birth and their name and their previous offences.
An entire profile on multiple different
people. It's embarrassing. It's funny because it's a security company and like... And as security companies, we do need good security because we're big targets because like people think, well, you know, we're at security, so we're going to be successful.
It's like physical stuff. So a lot of it was dealing with like shoplifting and things like that. So they were watching the CCTV cameras and they were talking amongst themselves. So a lot of clubs and shops and things like that were calculating all the information about criminals.
Right, here we go. Massive question mark now. We have a big question mark over this because this one of these stories is like, well, what actually happened? Did it happen?
Yeah.
And we kind of like read into it a bit more deeply and it was a database was online, had been exposed for what was it, up to 2 years or something like that. And and the records may or may not have been stolen.
Right.
And our first thought was like, well, surely you know. Yeah. Have you looked in the logs?
No, no,
like var log MySQL or something.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think what we were talking about earlier is the fact that there was two main issues. One that we think that a lot of applications, well, not thing, but we know a lot of applications have dependencies of MySQL servers or databases.
And Postgres, whatever, other brands exist.
Any kind of database that is needed for an application, and they don't actually know how to manage it or use it.
So it gets set up as a dependency, like you get some fancy cloud app, you put it on your server, even in a container or whatever, it's nicely packaged up. But what you don't notice is that one of the depths is a database server that's running on like what, port 30 whatever,
and you might not have actually set up the passwords as like admin or something.
That's what I was thinking.
Check ports insecure database 3306 and 1435
1336.
If that port's open, you've got a database running on your box.
Maybe it was a copy of a database as well, because so many people are making copies and backups now that maybe they forgot that it's actually internet facing. And there's another thing that people do as well, where they like store their backup on the internet all the time and things like that. So if they haven't actually checked their backup, and then it's not a really secure backup, that could have been that.
Yeah, like encrypted with a password
into.
Or something.
Yeah, so
thrown in a folder.
Yeah, I'll leave that on. That should be
.db,
fine. Admin, now I can get access to it. No one will want my backup. Well, no, that's not true. And this is what we mean. If you're running a security company, your job is not just the people who are coming in the shops and the cameras. The cameras are going onto a system somewhere, and cyber security is now absolutely terrible. It's so important in what you do, because you're holding a lot of data on people. No one's going to want to buy your cameras if it means that all of their stuff, including the boss who's buying its face and ass scratching, is leaked to everybody, right? Because that's true. You know, the IT manager knows like where the cameras are, and the security team do, but you know, you do probably have moments where you think, well, no one's watching it but me, but now they might not be thinking
that. That's always a moment to pause for thought. Nobody's watching it but me. I'm the only one who knows that. That's a pause for thought there. What other leaky buckets and risky pickles have we got?
OpenAI.
We thought we were not going to do that one because it's speculation. This is pure speculation rumor. Allegedly, OpenAI got their sales pitch leaked, which basically says, according to the crazy story, perhaps, that their licensing terms for all the AI will be biased in favor of the products of the people who buy it, right? So it's deliberately poisoned and biased AI models will be released in a large language model. So what you're buying is that your AI will be biased to sell your product.
And we just hope that this idea is going to go in the trash.
We hope so, yeah.
Imagine, like, you I don't know, you're a fan of Coca-Cola to drink in the day, and then you ask AI, how do I fix, I don't know, tooth decay? And it goes, do you know what? Coca-Cola.
It's not going to be that bad.
No, I know, but, like, this is ridiculous. Like, you can't be doing that.
I think what would actually happen is it would totally backfire. So it would look through its kind of associative network and look for the proximity of tooth decay and Coca-Cola and say, stop drinking Coca-Cola.
Would it, though?
Right? So it would do it. Well, that advertising model
It wouldn't say, stop drinking acidic or fizzy drinks. It would say, stop drinking Coca-Cola.
Precisely,
Maybe
I can't see that flying at all.
No,
like, the LLMs are not predictable things. Right?
Did anyone drop us any questions? I don't think so. You've all said lovely things.
We've got a few comments, and Alicia likes the idea of an Andy icon when we talk about Windows.
Do you know what? If you excuse me, I will show you what we're on about.
Oh, no, don't.
No, I'm not allowed. Ed created a meme of Andy, so when he goes on a little Microsoft rant, it does come out in work. So like, if you do join our lectures at some point, that may be a feature.
Well, close doors for that one.
And
do
not mess with the meme king, because I swear to God, you will get memed. I'm sure he has a database of hundreds of my faces.
I haven't, unfortunately. But
talking of Microsoft... Game Pass got the DRM hacked, the elliptic curve broken. Not sure what they found the coefficients for it.
Usually when you have game files, even if you can obtain the files themselves and they're torrented or whatever and you can download the game, they're usually DRM protected, which means that those files cannot be executed unless you've got a decryption key, which is normally issued when you purchase the game and they give you a key. Right.
It's automatic. It's already on the disk now, okay, right? Or on the download that you get.
Yeah.
The key
in the
background.
So with Microsoft Game Pass, if you've... The whole point of a Game Pass is you get access to a multiple amount of games.
Yeah, it's tied to your Microsoft account.
Monthly fee that is tied to your Microsoft account. So if you've got a Game Pass active on your account...
Which is just a license.
Yeah.
It's an e-license.
You can then access all these games for a set price. So it's actually one key for thousands of games. So the fact that that key's been cracked means that any of those games that are actually on Microsoft Game Pass...
That's great. And do you know what? I want to have a little bit of love for the Game Pass because a lot of people are going after it. They've closed a lot of game studios this week about it. And Microsoft bought a lot of game studios that are actually failing and some of them did need to close. There's been also reports that there's been a number of games that were saved because Microsoft did buy them and they've actually put it at cost finish those games.
Yeah.
And the Game Pass is really good because it is the greenest way of gaming. As a PC gamer all my life, even on consoles, the biggest problem that you've got is they go out of date and you need to go and replace the equipment.
Yeah.
And I have spent my whole life now as a gamer throwing out a device and buying a new one, throwing out a perfectly good computer because it's got an onboard motherboard that now will not run the new graphics card for my new DirectX. So now I have to throw out all of it. And the amount of e-waste I've had because I haven't been able to potentially cloud. I think cloud gaming is absolutely fantastic, and without the Game Pass we wouldn't have that. If we can start consolidating that, I don't have to build piles and piles of waste. I can buy a good machine that can access that cloud database. We won't need consoles, we won't need controllers.
It's the idea of buying a game. You're no longer buying a game, are you? You're running a game on somebody else's
machine.
leasing a game on but maybe that's a good business model. I mean, certainly for e-waste.
Right, there's loads of other kind of models of that. We've got Steam Deck as well.
There are loads.
There's loads of other eGPU services where you can actually just plug a computer into a massive graphics card.
We've got EA Sports, so you get ones that are direct from the game company. But this needs to have, Microsoft are really the first ones that started doing cloud gaming because I think that you know, they have the PC market and they have the Xbox market and they're looking at, they're trying to cut down that environmental waste to get, you know, get those zero emissions in, and they're thinking like, we are a big cause of this, and they have been. If you go back to a junkyard now, go to an e-waste junkyard, how many Windows 95s are now sitting there with that horrible white beige plastic that is non-biodegradable? That is the worst plastic that ever existed, and we can't get rid of it, and we're making those mistakes with devices years before they become a problem.
I think it's kind of built into there's a natural life, well, I call it natural, but it's not really natural, but there's a life cycle of game development, and the graphics are naturally going to get better, and
five-year-ish.
And then that's where the point where it's kind of contributing to that e-waste cycle, because
chuck my Xbox out, get
even
a new one.
Because even though, say, like the new GTA 6 is going to come out, it's going to require a much better graphics card as a minimum requirement. There's nothing to say that you can't knock down the minimum requirement and have less graphics, but they won't render a minimum graphics more than like
But people don't want that.
Certain base level.
Companies have tried to do that.
So they want
that.
So that legacy support's not really there, but that's the problem in itself.
And we've had games like try and do that where they're going, oh, you know what, we're going to make it really easy for... We want to have the pretty graphics and we want to have the top end really good so that it looks fantastic, but we also want to make a laptop version or something where you can play it low grade. There are so many bugs in that. It breaks both.
Well, it's developed on a system, isn't it? It's developed on a base system, and then they'll kind of make the driver updates.
You lose your graphics, suddenly they're stick people and it's all pixelated. And you know what? But it breaks the top end and it breaks the bottom end.
It's just a cost thing, isn't it? Even at the development level, you have to have, say they'll do... This supports this kind of bracket of graphics cards, and that'll be it, because Otherwise, that's they've got to rewrite the code. And
well, that's what they have to do as well. I want pretty images. Yeah. I don't want my competitor. Everyone moans at, like, you know, Bethesda when it releases, like, a game. They're like, oh, it's like 10 years old. It's like, have you seen how big the map is? Yeah. Have you seen how much stuff that you've got to do? I challenge you to go and finish Skyrim under 1,000 hours, every goddamn bit of it. You are not going to be able to. Yeah. You can't have that with these shiny graphics unless you miss things. And that's, you know, when Starfield came along, oh, it feels disconnected. We wanted good graphics, so now I can't do the flight thing. Like, what do you want? There's a fine line. You can't do everything right, and there are going to be bugs. And I think a cloud gaming may be a good way at the moment if it's done right. But having wonky
and less cheating on cloud gaming. You don't have to replicate objects, do you?
Well, if you get caught cheating, I guess you lose your license.
Well, with cloud gaming, you can run all the entities on the server.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, you have that massively reduces the cheating attack.
It doesn't stop, yeah.
I was going to say, like Fallout 76.
Well, let's look into that for another episode.
GTA 5 as well.
Yeah, that's another episode. Like anything with an online marketplace, that's been ruined. Yeah, okay.
Maybe I'm misunderstanding cloud gaming, but I need to get my head around it a bit more.
You're just borrowing someone else's tech instead of using your own.
But you're running the graphics card remotely, essentially. So rendering the graphics from your position point of view, your world position is being rendered remotely. And then it's like Wayland or something. You're sending the video signal to them.
Yeah, so the server's doing the CPU processing.
And you've got like a thin client kind of game. Yeah,
yeah,
I get it.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, we're almost ready to wrap up, aren't we? Because we're up at time.
Yeah.
It's flown by really super quick. Yeah,
how long has this been? An hour.
Almost been an hour.
Oh, we've been doing 30 minutes. We've been here an hour.
So much stuff to kind of go over.
We have to pack up and go home and get some food, aren't we? So,
we're literally going to get kicked out of the building in 4 minutes. So I think this is a good night from us.
So thanks for joining us. Yeah, good night from us.
Enjoy the beach at the weekend, guys.
Yeah. All right. Take care.